Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. I said specifically when we hopped on, usually Pete and I talk a little bit about whatever we're going to talk about, and then we'll just kind of throw some stuff around. This time, just in case we disagree on this, and I think we might, I wanted to make sure that that disagreement happened completely organically. So what we're going to do today is start by talking Luke and Lonzo. We're going to talk about Tyson Chandler, and then we're going to get into the starters stuff at the very end here. Pete, how you doing?
Doing well, my man. How are you?
Hey, the Lakers won.
Yeah.
I'll take it. Today feels a lot better sitting at, 5-6 versus 4-7?
Yeah, that feels way bigger than one game, doesn't it?
It does.
It's really funny. We talk so much about the first 11 games, right, yeah, over the course of the offseason. And if you asked me before the season, what would they be at this point? I think I would have said 5-6. Yeah. Like, that sounds about right. And they've been in all of the games except for one.
Yeah.
With a pretty flawed roster and a big hole was just addressed. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, the next nine games or so, although Sacramento's playing very well and that's the next game, our opportunities, it's a nice like 7-2 type of opportunity. Not saying they will go 7-2, but yeah, they've got a shot like to go on that type of run.
Yeah, I completely agree. It could be better. It could be worse, but I'll take where they're currently sitting.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
But we're going to start, though. The Lakers win an exciting, close game last night. They beat a team that I think has kind of sort of surprised people. I've been surprised at the way that they've competed, despite Jimmy Butler just like openly hating his teammates and Karl Anthony Towns being about as petulant as I've ever seen an NBA player that talented. But they beat Minnesota last night, and all of the conversation after the game was about Luke not playing Lonzo down the stretch. And then you asked Luke about it after the game. I thought, because there was a, I forget who was shooting free throws, but somebody was at the free throw line, and Lonzo just subbed into the game, and he was standing up there at like the 3-point line area right at the top and was kind of flexing his knee. And I don't know if that was just like him trying to get back and warmed up or whatever, but when you see him kind of working on that left knee, I freak the hell out because that's the knee that's giving him problems. So I thought maybe Luke not playing Lonzo down the stretch or at all in the fourth quarter had something to do with health. It didn't sound like it at all. It was point guarding. He liked the way that Rajon Rondo was point guarding. So my question to you is, and I'm not going to give my 2 cents on this until you chime in. How did you feel about that? Did you disagree? Were you ambivalent? How did you feel about that as it played out?
I thought it was the wrong move for a couple of reasons, specifically down the stretch of the game, mm-hmm, in that obviously Derrick Rose had caught fire, and he had hit some tough shots over Lonzo as well, right? Yeah. But Lonzo had done a better job on him. Like, Lonzo won some of the battles against him, if nothing else, mm-hmm, right? And when a guy's hot like that, and he was shooting as he has very few times in his career, right? Like, some of the, yeah, shots he was making.
He hit more three-pointers last night than in any point in any game that he's ever played in. And that's including the 50-point game.
Wow. Yeah. So, yeah, he was on fire, and, you know, some of those were open, some of them were not, but I think that defensively, they needed a guy who could help get a stop. And then offensively, in the last couple of minutes of the game, for better or for worse, and honestly, the Lakers have been doing this more than the last 2 minutes or so. It's been more than that. It's pretty much give the ball to LeBron and get the hell out of the way.
Yeah.
I would prefer the better spot-up shooter of the, mm-hmm, two. Obviously, Rondo's shooting a good percentage this year, but he's not a guy. He only takes the most wide open type of shots, right? I think between the defensive capabilities that Lonzo brings to the table and his ability to spot up shoot, and it's not like Rondo was killing it in the game, right? Like, I have been totally fine with him going to Rondo as opposed to Lonzo in a few games this year. Last night wasn't one of them. I thought that the Lakers kind of escaped. And one last thing along those lines, even though it's tangential to this, I don't like how infrequently Luke does offense-defense substitutions. For, yeah, example, on the last play of the game where Derrick Rose missed that three, why is Kyle Kuzma in the game?
Right.
like we can, we're, you know, I sense you're about to disagree with me about the Lonzo Rondo thing, right? Mm-hmm. But we can at least agree, right? If you need to get a defensive stop up two with 9 seconds left, have your best defensive five on the court to defend them. And Kuzma's not one of those guys. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Or even along that same line, have Josh Hart out there for the offensive possessions.
For sure.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. And Hart, like, you could make a great, it's easy to narrow this down to like a Lonzo versus Rondo type of thing. Mm-hmm. Josh Hart was on fire and he, you know, he was defending okay last night, better than he usually does on the perimeter. So yeah, like you could have even made an argument for him, but go ahead.
So it's not to say, well, first off, I disagree wholeheartedly and you and I can never do podcasts together ever again. I don't disagree with everything that you said there. I don't have problems with people who had a problem with the way last night played out. I also think, though, that Luke made if you read his quote a certain way, there is a way that you can, I can kind of agree with what he was thinking there. He wanted, and you know, because he mentioned point guarding. He liked the way that Rajon Rondo was out there point guarding, or mm-hmm. something like that, playing point guard, whatever the exact quote was. And look, for everything that Lonzo does, he isn't very vocal, and he isn't going to steer people and make sure they're all in the right positions and stuff like that. He's more likely. It's why I think he needs to start. It's because when he wouldn't be very good handling the second unit, because I think he would just kind of take a step back and let Lance do his thing. And I don't think that is what that second unit needs. And Rondo is a lot more effective at just getting people in their spots, or at least looking like he's doing so. Right. So on that aspect of it, okay, I still think it's a Byron-esque quote. It feels like the kind of thing that Byron would say, but okay, as long as it doesn't become a trend. And then like the last thing here is, and this was the retort that I had all night in my mentions, but Rose was hitting those shots regardless of who was guarding him. He was, mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, because a couple of the shots that he hit, at least one of them that I can think of on the right wing, was like step back late in the shot clock against a switch defender who was longer than Rondo.
And it was Chandler, just, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, if a guy's shooting like that, then I don't think it particularly matters. Where I do think there's a fair case to be made that Lonzo needs to be out there is earlier in the fourth quarter. There is no situation where Lonzo should sit an entire fourth quarter. That right. I think that
and
that
Rondo plays right, like, yeah, 17 straight minutes or something like
right.
that. Right. So we do agree on that. I think there are places to get Lonzo more minutes, even if you are going to close with Rondo. The issue that I take with the point guardy things are the only part of it that's valid really only applies to last night's game in most instances, mm-hmm. in that Tyson Chandler was new,
yeah.
and you needed a guy who could kind of communicate like, hey, this is what we do right here. Or he was, you know, Rondo gave a really interesting quote last night about how they were running a lot of the universal actions. So chin sets and UCLA and things that like every team runs to one extent or another that Chandler yeah. would know. Okay. That makes sense to me. But by and large, like, what are those point guardy things that he was doing? There were not, like, I didn't see those possessions that mm-hmm. like he hit Kuzma, for example, on a couple of corner threes, which he hit one of those and Kuzma did and he missed another. But it was like this early offense transition. Like Lonzo totally.
Yeah. Lonzo can do that.
And in the half court, like, we weren't running crap except for give the ball to LeBron and have yeah. Rondo or someone else set the ball screen for him. So, like, there's no added value for Rondo on those possessions. So it's something that I understand it from and just one, again, I'm being tangential today because it's something I have conflicted feelings on.
Well, can we take a quick break and then come back?
Yeah, I've got my crazy theory. That
All right, so hang tight and then Pete's going to come back and give a crazy theory. Whoa, how the turns have tabled. Today's show is brought to you in part by Mazuma. Mazuma USA is the company that you need to be working with if you own a small business. They have CPAs, bookkeepers, and accountants all located in the U.S. and all within range of communication in a quick and timely manner. And that stuff comes really in handy when random expenses happen, when tax season comes up and you need to get organized for that, when you are out for a dinner and you aren't sure whether or not you can write off that dinner and you just have a quick question to ask, you have all of that. That might be from experience, I can't lie. But all of those questions can be asked via email, chat, text, call, whatever, and they get back to you right away. They have packages starting at only $75 a month. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to give you a phone number, as I have throughout the entirety of our partnership together. I want you to call 213-947-6926. Again, that's 213-947-6926 to set up a free consultation, and we can find out what makes the best sense for you. Mazuma, your small business's one-stop shop for bookkeeping, taxes, and unlimited accounting advice. All right, Pete, I had to lend Pete. This took a little while. This was an extra long break. I had to drive all the way out to Pete's house and give him a tinfoil hat, show him how to make it and all that stuff. But Pete, do your thing.
I've never thought Lonzo's a point guard in the half court.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a two. That's what he was at UCLA. Even when you talk to him about it, like, hey, what's it like sharing the court with Rondo, which Luke has gone away from, which I plan on asking him about in the next couple of days. You know, what's it like being a two alongside him? And he's like, oh, it's like it was at UCLA. Mm-hmm. And I think that people mistake, and this is even like basketball people, and I would even argue the way that Lonzo's used him, his passing ability and his ability to push the pace with him being a guy who organizes and runs the offense. Because Luke is absolutely right that Rondo does in situations prior to the last couple minutes when he just gave the ball to LeBron, Rondo organizes and runs the show more. And that's not the type of player that Lonzo is. So if you want that type of guy out there, yeah, Rondo is the guy to go to. But I would argue that if you expected Lonzo to be that, you didn't watch him enough in college. And that I think they want – I think there's a more overarching theme here is that they want Lonzo to grow up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's not like it's not anything like insidious or bad or anything like that, but he's probably the youngest emotionally and mentally of the Lakers' young core.
Yeah.
And he is literally as well, just a couple months younger than Ingram. But he is the furthest away from being like as assertive as he needs to be. That's not a problem with Hart, Kuzma, or Ingram. Lonzo he needs to find that. I also think it's easy, you know, a month in or 11 games in or whatever to have it feel hopeless and this and that. But I think that there's a couple of things going on and that I don't think like he's not what they want him to be in terms of as a player. And I don't think that's fair. He's also not what they want him to be emotionally and mentality wise and maturity wise. And that's totally fair for them to have that and want to develop that. And we may be looking at a different scenario in January, February that where they've developed that within him. We'll see.
Yeah. I think the context at which that last night's events took place with Tyson Chandler being out there and Rondo, you know, Luke wanting Rondo out there to kind of walk Chandler through all that stuff. Like, there's at least what I said last night after the game was there's at least a reasoning that I can read, right? There is an excuse. There's an explanation. Whereas like when Byron used to do the same kind of thing with Ronnie Price, there wasn't one. There was no explanation. There was no excuse. It was just stupid. It was not the right play the right way to run that team. So like I don't want it to become a trend by any means whatsoever, because
is it not a trend yet? It ain't the first time.
I don't, to this extent, no, No. Because, like you said earlier, there have been games that Rondo has closed that I was like, yeah, Lonzo didn't earn those minutes. He didn't. There have been games that Lonzo just kind of floated around, and I said, well, if he's not going to be effective, get somebody in there who might be able to. Now, I do think, and I don't know if this is going to be your counter, what tends to happen with veterans versus young guys is that coaches tend to notice that thing a lot quicker with young guys versus veterans. Sure. And that kind of thing, like, that frustrates me across all coaches.
Is there value in rewarding Lonzo when he is engaged with those minutes? Like, part of Absolutely. What concerns me, right, about last night is that his shot wasn't falling, right? Neither was Rondo's, but his shot wasn't falling, but that's not something that, like, that's basketball. It's mm-hmm. going to come and go. That's how basketball works. But I would argue that in all of the other respects in which Lonzo can be very good, he was very good in that game last night, and he was engaged, and he was, big part of the motor. His plus minus is awful. That needs to be brought up. I think that it's because he's been in that's like the only time he plays is with that starting lineup.
Yeah.
And so even when he's in engage, I don't think that starting lineup works. I think they're going to have to address that soon. But the only time that he's in is with that starting lineup. And, you know, I think that artificially brings down his numbers, mm-hmm. but he was very good in that first quarter last night. He made like a dumb pass off of JaVale's knee, and he had like another turnover, but all in all, he was getting steals, rebounds, nice
pushing
the ball in transition. Mm-hmm. Right. So all of that stuff is, you know, like, that's what you want to see him doing. And it's disheartening to, even like you said, even if he's not in the game, for him to sit on the bench with 3-4 minutes left in the third quarter and never see the court again.
One place where I think it's fair to be concerned is, for those who are wondering how much of this is from on high. Mm-hmm. And we'll never quite know that for sure, but
or even LeBron.
Yeah, well, LeBron's on high.
Good point. Yeah, exactly. Right.
So it's for those who are killing Luke, look, LeBron, I saw it a ton. I've seen it a ton, both in Silver Screen and Rules comments, Facebook, Twitter, my own mentions, your mentions, whatever. Ben Rosales had a couple doozies that I saw on his timeline that he quote tweeted. Shouts to Ben, man. I love his Twitter presence. I do think that it with some of these moves that are so head scratching, so obviously head scratching, you have to take into account the situation, the political scenario that Luke is handling this team. And at the end of the day, he's going to have to make it work either way. And maybe at some point that means standing up to the people who are on high to do what he considers, or maybe what we consider to be the right thing or the best thing for the team. But I also don't think that can necessarily go unmentioned.
No, that's a great point. And I think that comes into play a lot when it's not completely and totally obvious. Like, a game like last night, like, Lonzo was really good in some ways, but he's not a guy who organizes the offense. He was not shooting well. Mm-hmm. It was not something where, like, I would argue that there was a decent gap. But if there is some sort of exterior influence, you got to be, it's kind of like a boxing match, right? Where you're fighting the champion. Like, you have to clearly defeat him to win on the judges' scorecards.
It's exactly what we talked about to start the year. It's exactly what you and I talked about when it came to Hart and KCP. And Hart has knocked the hell out of KCP, right?
He has.
And that's the opposite example of this. And unfortunately, and look, I'm here to say that it's not necessarily fair. I'm here to say that I don't agree with the politics there. But they exist, and
yeah, they do. It just makes you wonder long term, like, the odds of either guy being around next year, whether it's Rondo or Lonzo, right? Yeah. Like, is it something where if you're right, if it does come up from on high, is that an illustration of their opinion of him now, or both now and long term, right? Because it would behoove them to get Lonzo to where they want him to be, and maybe that's what they're doing, right? But because he's the guy on the longer term contract on the rookie deal, Rondo's on a 1-year deal, right? Like, it seems to me they are in a position to be more incentivized to develop Lonzo and have him end up being that guy.
Look, I'm just going to say it, and people are going to get angry at me for it, but Lonzo, Ingram, and KCP mathematically works for Anthony Davis. I'm just going to throw that out there. And we, you know, Anthony Davis is newly clutch. We know that Magic is desperate for that second star. And I'm not saying that that's how I think this is going to play out. I'm not saying that at all. But when you talk about, like, this might give us a glimpse into the thought process into long term and how Magic and LeBron see this roster going out and stuff, that's not non-present. You know, that's not a non-factor.
The only thing with that is that I think the Lakers would prefer to sign a guy for free this summer. And then if they'd miss out on that, and then if that's the case, KCP isn't under contract anymore. Mm-hmm. So now there are ways, you know, in signing guys to MLEs and trading them for, you know, in the middle of next year for a guy like Davis. But that is where I think that's less likely. Not to mention the most obvious point of the Pelicans are probably not interested in doing that yet and want to try and see if they can get him a supermax and, you know, keep him there as their franchise player for years and years.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a quick second here. I got to drive over there and grab my tinfoil hat again. And then we'll come back here and we got to talk about the starters because it's getting kind of noticeable. Last night wasn't great what I saw from the starters. So we're going to come right back and talk about that. I hope wherever you guys are listening right now that you just stood up and gave a standing ovation to two guys kind of sort of disagreeing and being able to move on. Like, I wish we could do that on Twitter. It'd be nice if it wasn't like personal insult singing whenever you disagree with somebody. But I digress.
Yeah, I try to. That's one of my personal policies is like if I'm going to get up into somebody and I have had my beefs and whatnot, but that is totally stuff. And some of them are people I have seen in person and I do see at the facility or at Staples. Like I'm going to say that to you, to your face too. Yeah. So that's good personal policy.
Yeah. Yeah. If somebody says stuff to me, like if I look at somebody's avatar and they're like $130 soaking wet and they're calling me like all kinds of names up and down and cursing my mother, I don't think you would say that if we met.
Yeah, just people just don't do that in person, right? They think that, right? That's part of the value of Twitter, yeah. Right? To say what you actually
my own
think,
wife
right?
thinks that about me. Like, but nobody really says it all that often. All right, let's talk about the starters though. You had a tweet, and I should have asked you to pull this up, and maybe I can kind of stall a little bit here so you could pull up the numbers. Okay, yeah. Cool. So you had a tweet about the numbers and the rating differential that the starters have played with so far, and it's going to swing from game to game because it's a small sample. But let's just go off of those numbers here, and that'll be the foundation of the analysis.
Okay, so this is the current starting lineup's net rating over the five games in which they've started together. If you're not familiar with net rating, it's just how many points are you better than the other team over the course of 100 possessions or worse, right? So first game was at Minnesota, -33.6, right? You're getting whooped. Mm-hmm. Dallas was the one time where they were good, and they were very good, +41.2. At Portland, -25. Versus Toronto, -70.7. And then versus Minnesota, -15.5. So let's flush the Toronto game down the toilet, right? That's one of those games that happens in the NBA. Every other one of them, except for Dallas, who's the only bad team the Lakers have played in that stretch, every other one is -15 and worse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Lakers are searching, and as Luke should be, for lineups. And I would argue that he has made progress. He's doing things better than he was in game one, which is what he wants to see in game 10.
Mm-hmm.
I am curious, and I want to know your opinion on this, is how long do you give a lineup like this before you try to make a change?
Given that the math is so staggering here, I don't think you need to give it much longer.
Okay.
You know, I just maybe a game or two, but if it, you know, minus 15 is not small, man. Like that, even in a small sample size, like that's that, and that's like the best that it's looked against a good team is the thing, is a minus 15. I thought last night, you know, because what I went into when I watch a Laker game, I go into it looking for certain things. So last night I was interested to see how the second unit looked with Tyson Chandler and the things that he was going to do and the defense that he was going to be able to play. And the other thing was, let's see how they start this one. And one thing that I noticed early on in the game, especially when Lonzo got a rebound, was he would look to push it and he would get out there, but he was ahead of the people filling the lanes. And it was so obvious, and it happened regardless of almost regardless of ball handler, that it was something that I was wondering, like, yeah, is this something that they were coached? Like, are they all trailing?
No, that's a great point. And that was absolutely the case where guys weren't. And that's last night's first shift with Lonzo was the first time that I saw him playing at his pace rather than acquiescing to LeBron's. Yeah. But that unit in particular very much plays at LeBron's pace, right, in the past, right? And I think it's to their detriment.
Right. And so, like, because Hart loves getting out and running. I don't think Ingram is as big a fan as getting out and running. I think Ingram falls way too in love with his isolation off the dribble. Like, I think he likes that aspect of his game way too much, and he makes the game harder on himself with that approach to it. But Hart likes to get out and run and fill the lane and either run to the basket or run to the corner three-pointer. And you need the more guys that you have like that, because I think the way that he approaches the game kind of sets the tone for the other guy, the guy filling the other lane opposite him. Sure. Because, like, basically, and this is just human nature, right? Like, if you're running as a group and the lead guy is only barely ahead of you, well, you're gonna run to the pace of the lead guy there, right? And I think when Kuzma sees that, you know, Brandon Ingram is barely crossing half court at about the same time that he's crossing the half court, well, then, okay, I'm doing all right, you know? But when Josh Hart is 30 feet ahead of whichever other wing is running out there with him, mm-hmm, that forces the other wing to get out there and get on their horse. And
I think he activates Kuzma a bit. I think he does. Yeah, like in transition can be a really devastating pair filling those wings, either for those spot ups or getting all the way to the rack.
I think the Lakers look at their best when, whether it's Rondo or LeBron or Lonzo has the ball somewhere in the middle of the court, and then Kuzma and Hart are filling lanes, like that, filling opposite lanes, and they figure it out how to make that kind of situation work to the best. I don't have synergy data to back this up. I'm just working off of what I've seen in games, and that's really what I've noticed. And that's where, look, the Lakers, and the point that I made last night, and I want to know what you think about this, is, like, last year the Lakers operated, they wanted to play even with their starters and try to tread water as much as they possibly could with starters and then take teams to task with their bench. When you have LeBron on your team, you can't approach the game that way.
That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Your starters have to be better.
LeBron's, like, plus minus is bad.
Yeah.
That's never happened in his career, or at least since plus minus has been a thing, you know? Yeah. So I agree with you on that. I'm going to kick it back to you, though. So if this isn't the lineup, what change do you make?
See, this is where it's tough, because so the math that I wound up doing last night was, I think Ingram is an iffy fit with either group. With the bench unit, it's tough because Rondo's going to have the ball a ton, and it's not like Ingram can spot up and feel all that comfortable there. Though I kind of looked, I liked how Ingram and Tyson Chandler or JaVale McGee pick and roll sets kind of looked last night. So maybe that's where you can set Ingram to the bench. And then basically, though, what it comes down to for me is which of those two guys, Ingram or Kuzma, works best with LeBron. And that's all the math that you have to do, and it's Kuzma by quite a bit at this point.
What about the defensive end?
Well, that's where, you know, unfortunately it means that Hart has to get better defensively, you know. And the other thing too that I get I think the offense for the Lakers sets the tone for their defense. And I think the Lakers are always going to be better and by a lot than they're going to be defensively. So I would just try to punch teams in the face with the first unit's offense and then try to sustain it with a second unit and not try to lose the lead with that second unit. And I think the best way to do that is by having Kuzma out there. But you lose a ton, man, because Ingram looks really good defensively.
So I'm playing a little bit of devil's advocate with you mm-hmm. on this, in that the data backs up that lineup, right? That Lonzo Hart, Kuzma, LeBron, JaVale group, net rating of plus 8.8 mm-hmm. versus, I think it's like minus 11 or somewhere around there when you just replace Hart with Kuzma mm-hmm. in the same lineup, right? Hart with Ingram.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So we've seen that lineup and they've played 50 minutes together, which is a lot for this at this point of the season. And they've been good. They were great against Phoenix, right? But they were right there with like their... When they were a negative net rating against good teams, it was like minus 2.3 type thing. Not this minus 15, minus 70, minus 40 type stuff right. that we've seen yeah. with this other line, right? So they've been competitive with other good teams, which is what you want. That said, I would like to give a try first to Lonzo, Hart, Ingram, LeBron, and McGee. Even if I think that ultimately Kuzma instead will be... that lineup will be better. I do think at this point of the season, there's value in finding those things out. I've seen enough from that group with Hart instead of Ingram that played while the suspensions were mm-hmm. happening to be like, hey, that lineup's pretty good. They can play together.
We can store that in the back.
Let's store that. We know that we have this. Mm-hmm. Let's give that lineup with Kuzma back on the bench and with Ingram and with Ingram starting and with Hart starting instead of KCP, which was what it was at the beginning of the season, mm-hmm. with Lonzo and JaVale and LeBron. Let's see what that looks like.
To your point, I think the Lakers have a much higher ceiling if that lineup works out versus if they we know what this lineup might look like with Kuzma in there instead of Ingram, right? But if we find out that lineup with Ingram can work, that unlocks a different tier for what the Lakers are capable of.
Because of the defensive end, right?
Yeah, because of the defensive end. And just because I think Ingram is a more talented player, right? And if he's on the court more often than Kuzma and you can find a way to make that work, then that's more talent on your court more often than not. So,
sure. I think one thing that's important to remember in all of this, we were talking to George Sedano about this earlier on Twitter, is that like Lamar Odom and Manu Ginobili and Kevin McHale for us old guys played off of the bench for mm-hmm. championship teams, to which you made a great reply. This is part of the value of having veterans, right? Yeah. And them being able to do that. Whereas a guy like Ingram, I think if you have him come off of the bench,
his response, right? He's not interested.
And even if he plays 30 minutes per game, and even if he closes, right? Yeah. Just like Lamar Odom, that's the guy that I brought up, right? Lamar Odom was the third best player on a championship team mm-hmm. on two of them, yep. right? If Ingram gets to that point, I think we'd all be pretty damn thrilled, right? Yeah. Like if you're a high level contributor on a championship caliber team, and Lamar came off of the bench, right? But even if he gets the minutes and he closes the way Lamar did and all of that, I suspect, and like you said, he's even said, made comments to this end, that it would not be a comfortable transition for him. I think we look at starting as more of an honor and more ceremonial than we should, because if the guy's getting the minutes, if the guy's closing in crunch time, like, all you're looking to do is like this particular group of five guys plays better together.
Yeah.
Then, and it's not anyone's fault, right? And we will find a couple of other five man groups in which somebody else works in, but it still is so, it matters to these guys.
It does. Right?
Like, well, and yeah, we can't overlook that.
Well, the way I would put it is, so it's easier for an NBA veteran to accept a role off of the bench because they've been surrounded by better basketball players for a larger chunk of their life compared to the guys who are just fresh into the league. Ingram is what, 21 years old now? And he, for the vast majority of his life, I would imagine he has started. And that's seen as a source of pride. I mean, hell, you played sports, I played sports. Starting was a big thing when we were kids. And the longer that you get separated from that, and the more that you're surrounded by legitimate NBA players and you recognize, okay, fit matters, actual talent matters. There are just more people talented in the world than I thought there were when I was 18 years old. And therefore, it isn't such an insult, for lack of a better term, to not start. That's why it helps to have the veterans there. And we'll see if Ingram is like, again, like we said earlier, I think the team has a higher ceiling if they're able to make it work with Ingram starting. But if he comes off of the bench and he accepts that role, he immediately becomes a keeper, in my opinion. Yeah. Like that immediately makes him, in my opinion, the most intriguing Lakers prospect, because that means that you have a former number two overall pick who is willing to swallow their ego for the betterment of the team at 21 years old, but he has to be able to do it.
Sure. And I think it's way too easy for us to place our fans' perspective onto players.
Yeah.
Like, Brandon Ingram may have grown up as a Laker fan. I know he's made comments about that, but he is playing for his career. Brandon Ingram is a Brandon Ingram fan, mm-hmm. and that is no different than every other player who plays in the NBA. It's not a slight on him.
Yeah.
And he is playing for a second contract. And so all of the do what's best for the team thing, of course, as fans, we are fans of the team, right? And we have our favorite players and we want our players to get minutes and all that. But like, overall, Laker fans want the Lakers to be successful. Well, Brandon Ingram wants the Lakers to be successful. And this is true of any player, again. Mm-hmm. But he also wants Brandon Ingram to be successful, right? Yeah. And he wants, when he comes up for a contract, he wants to be compensated accordingly, right? And to be able to put up the numbers that help allow him to do that. So all of that plays a factor into – it doesn't make him a bad guy or selfish or anything like that. But those are just – you know, part of those politics on the other end from the on low. If the other end is on high, then this is the end on low, where the players are fighting for their own interests as they should.
I'll give you, we'll end on this, but imagine, so you have developed and built a tremendous product with Laker Film Room. I've had my success with Locked On Lakers. If, let's say Laker Film Room gets purchased. You make a purchase, and whoever steps in says, look, I really like your content, and it's gotten you to this point, but we want a different voiceover guy. It might make it a better product and whatever, but I would imagine on some level you'd be like,
no, that's mine.
Right. David could step in and say, look, you're still going to be associated with the show. I want you to still do hosting or whatever, but I want you to let go of this, and this aspect of the show. And I'd be like, I don't, you know, it's just human nature. And that's how this works.
And on the flip side, there are things in both of our instances where we would be willing to compromise, right? And it depends on what the payoff is on the other side, right? Yeah. And there are things that we hold more dearly than others, and that's going to be true of players too.
Yeah. All right. That'll do it, though, for this episode and this week of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Have a great rest of your weekend. An interesting stretch ahead. This is where the Lakers have to rip off a few wins, and Saturday's game is bigger than I want it to be, but it's a big one.
That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. Make sure you guys are getting your questions into iTunes in the form of a 5-star review. Make sure you're following the show on Twitter at Locked On Lakers. You guys know where to find Pete and I, and we'll be back at it again next week. Have a great weekend, everybody.